Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
At Team Toyota, they've been selling and servicing new and used Toyotas in your community for over 50 years. And you can reserve your next new Toyota with them today. You'll get a realistic timeline, and even in this crazy market, they won't charge you over MSRP. Or don't wait at all. With over 75 certified Toyotas, including a bunch of RAV4 and Highlanders, you can drive one home today. And you can always trust them to maintain your current vehicle. Their service and collision centers are high-tech, comfortable, and will save you time and money. Team Toyota can help you go anywhere you want, but they'll always be your hometown team. Just visit teamtoyota.net and choose from three locations in Langhorne, Glen Mills, or Princeton. Hello, it is the Phillies Talk Podcast. It's Jim and Corey, and it is Monday, September 26th, and it's the Phillies' final scheduled off day of the regular season as we sit down here. Jim, the Phillies had a weekend series against the Braves. It was a pretty big one. There was some good. There was some bad. Now they get ready for this season-ending 10-game road trip to Chicago, Washington, and Houston. All the chips are on the line for the Phillies. Missed a big opportunity on Sunday because the Brewers had lost earlier in the day as the Phillies were sitting through that very long rain delay. Phillies had a chance to not step on their neck or clinch a wild card spot, but they could have made it 2.5 games with the tiebreaker as they get ready for this last road trip, but they were unable to finish the job against Atlanta.
Yeah. They come out of there with a split of a 4-game series, which, you know, the previous weekend in Atlanta, the Phillies were manhandled. They were swept in 3 games. So, you play Atlanta again 4 days later in a 4-game series. So I think if someone had told you, hey, you're going to split that 4-game series, you'd certainly take it. But your point is well taken. I mean, that was a series that I think they could have won and maybe should have won, taking 3 of 4. And that would have put them in a really good position going into the final 10 games, both in the standings and I think emotionally or confidence-wise, especially with the chance you might see Atlanta again coming up in the first round of the playoffs. But all in all, you know, I do think where you were, you take the split, and you focus on going on the road and trying to go 500. It would be great if they could go a game over 500. I think that would do it for them. 500, I think, has a good chance of doing it for them. And if that sounds like a low bar, they're a game under 500 on the road for the season. They haven't played particularly well on the road lately, so. And you got the Cubs who've played well lately. Then you finish, go to Washington for 4. It could be a rainy weekend. It could be a long weekend. And then you finish with Houston. But you really, this Cubs series, I just feel like it's going to be a tough one. I feel like it's going to be a meat grinder for the Phillies because Cubs got you're going to face Stroman that first night. They got some young players that are playing to open eyes over there. And like I said, they've played pretty well recently. I think it's a good thing you have Wheeler to start it off and really be a tone setter. Among the positive things that happened on that last homestand for the Phillies was Zach Wheeler pitching pretty well. So I think he's ready to go and take it up another notch against the Cubs. And they need him to, like I said, be a tone setter. Game one means a lot in the series. And if these feel like playoff games, they are playoff games without the label. The Phillies need to go out and win ball games and put this thing away and get where they need to go.
Yeah, this Cubs series, the Cubs have won 5 of their last 6 games. They're a bad team. They're 19 games under 500, but there's different levels of bad this year in Major League Baseball. And the Cubs are above that tier of like Nationals, Marlins, Pirates. In fact, they just beat up on the Marlins and Pirates last week. And as you mentioned, Marcus Stroman pitching the first game of that series, he could easily go six innings, two runs, and you're in a tight game in the later stages. A note on that, the Phillies have adjusted their starting rotation. It's going to be Wheeler on Tuesday, Aaron Nola on Wednesday, Ranger Suarez Thursday. Nola moves a spot ahead of Ranger Suarez, and what that does is it lines Nola up to pitch in the third to last game of the regular season, the series opener in Houston, and then that would allow Nola to pitch on regular rest in game two of a playoff series. So this is obviously important. You want one of your best guys able to go in the first two games of that playoff series, especially because, you know, some other members of the Philly starting rotation have kind of scuffled. Like Kyle Gibson, Sunday wasn't totally his fault. In the first inning Sunday, Brandon Marsh lost a ball in the sun because he wasn't wearing sunglasses. It went for a double. The Braves ended up scoring two runs in that inning. They would not have scored if not for that, and probably changed the course of that game early. Gibson struck out a lot of guys. I think he had nine Ks over five innings, but he's stumbled a couple times lately. The Phillies bullpen has had it struggles as well. David Robertson blew the save on Sunday. He got two quick outs and loaded the bases and threw a game-tying wild pitch. So the Phillies are really looking for reliability there in the later innings. They're getting it right now with Jose Alvarado and with Zach Eflin, who's pitched very well, appearing in four of the last six games for the Phillies, really giving them a needed relief arm late in games. By the way, Jim, also Brad Hand hitting the injured list on Sunday with the elbow. So Phillies bullpen kind of in flux right now.
Yeah, well, it's a very fatigued bullpen. It's done a good job, really, since June 1. Struggled recently, but it, you know, did a very good job for a good while during the season to help this team get back in it and stay in it. But right now, I see a tired unit out there. That's why Eflin is huge with that fresh arm. Could be huge. And Alvarado, being on the roll he is on, could be huge. Starting pitching, you know, they've really prioritized rest for their starting staff here over the last few weeks. I think you could probably make a case that Zach Wheeler's trip to the IL lasted longer than it maybe needed to last, maybe a little longer than he deep down inside wanted it to last. I think the team was kind of looking at where they are in the standings a little bit, where he was and his importance to where they want to go, and they tried to squeeze out a little extra rest for him during the course of that IL stint. Aaron Nola, they've prioritized rest for him since the All-Star break, giving him extra days here and there. And now that he's back on the regular rest here in Chicago, like you said, it allows him to pitch game two of the postseason. Wheeler would pitch game one of the postseason. That is exactly the template that the Phillies have put down since, you know, really for 2 years now. Two plus years. If they thought if they get to the postseason, they got two pretty good arms that give you a chance in a short series in Wheeler and Nola. And that's where they are. And that's probably in their hope of making some noise in early October in the postseason. Should they get there, you know, they need to go out and those two guys need to dazzle and need to take you deep in the game. So you're not going 3-4 deep in that bullpen because that bullpen is fatigued. But this thing with Zach Eflin is lining up pretty nice. He is hungry emotionally because he's a longtime Philly who's never gotten there. He is hungry because he spent 3 months on the IL. He is hungry because he wants to show people he can still fire. He's going into free agency. He's hungry because he wants to win. And that fresh arm, I think, has a chance of really being very beneficial to the club, and Alvarado needs to keep doing what he's doing. And, you know, maybe they can lock something up a few days early, get Robertson, get Sir Anthony a little rest, and get them locked and loaded, because they're going to be very important as well.
Yeah, clinching early would have huge benefits for the Phillies. With Zach Wheeler, a couple questions. One, he went four innings through 58 pitches in his first start back. What are you realistically expecting in his second start? And the other question is, the velocity we saw from him in his return was the best velocity we've seen all year. Do you think some of that was based on like the adrenaline of finally getting back on a mound? Do you expect to see that again against the Cubs?
I think adrenaline and just rest, freshness, you know, those were the reason for the velocity jump. As far as what to expect from him tomorrow night, Tuesday night in Wrigley Field, The rule of thumb is basically when you bring back a pitcher or building up a pitcher, the rule of thumb is, you know, one extra inning, add one inning, one up and down, and add 15 pitches. So what was he at, 58? So I think we could see him, you know, get what's 58 plus 15? I'm not good at math.
So he could probably get to that 75 range.
Or he gets up to that 75 range, and that is right where they want him to be and right where he wants to be, because he is on record as saying if he can get to 7 innings and 90 pitches in his third start back from the IL, which would be his final start in the regular season, then he will be A-OK for the postseason. So you can just see how it's incrementally building. So get him around 75, get him around 90, and then turn him loose in game one of the postseason and roll your dice that the way you're built with two really good starting pitchers at the top can take you somewhere.
While the Phillies were unable to pull out Sunday's game, they came back several times. In the first inning, they fell behind 2 runs, and Kyle Schwarber immediately answered with his 41st homer of the year. 2 innings later, hits his 42nd homer of the year. Schwarber's hitting .214, and he leads the majors in strikeouts, but it's still been a pretty memorable season for him with the Phillies. He came out prior to the game. It was Fan Appreciation Day. He thanked the fans for the way they've welcomed him and his family here in his first year, and you know, talked about the job not being done. They want to see what this place looks like in a playoff atmosphere. This has been a pretty by all accounts, Kyle Schwarber has fit in well with the Phillies, and they paid him to hit dingers. That's what he's done. I mean, they were going to live with the low batting average and strikeouts.
Yeah. You mentioned he's hitting .214, but I still think he's in the top two or three on this team in terms of MVP for this team. Maybe he is the MVP. I'm not sure that they are where they are without his June. I mean, he carried that team in June with some help from Rhys Hoskins. Those two guys were huge difference makers, but that was looking like a dead team heading into June. They made a managerial change. They were flat. They were down. They were losing. And Kyle Schwarber just started hitting home run after home run and driving in run after run and helping them win ball game after ball game. And that created a momentum, and that created a confidence, that created a totally different vibe in that clubhouse, where it was like drudgery coming to the ballpark. They couldn't wait to come to the ballpark because Schwarber or Hoskins was going to do something crazy that night, and they were going to win a ball game. And that's what it's all about. Winning cures everything. So Schwarber led a June turnaround that got this team back on the map. And then there was more of an ensemble effort in keeping it there. Real Muto came alive. Another one of the team MVPs. Bullpen was very good for a long stretch. Starting pitching was very good for a long stretch. Very consistent. Maybe not spectacular, but just consistent and professional, and gave you winning effort after winning effort. And so I thought he struck the right chord yesterday when he talked to the fans, and then he struck the right chord with his power bat. He's a run producer. That's what they brought him here for. He has done that, and I think his contributions extend beyond, you know, the batter's box. He's a terrific leader, having now observed him for a full season, including spring training. Very inclusive leader, has a real knack for including everyone from the 28th man to the team star, and bringing everybody together. He's very upbeat when things are going bad. He has a way to, you know, kind of put things in perspective. I mean, they brought him here for and they talked about this in the Clearwater press conference when they signed him. And you heard these rumblings when they were pursuing him in the offseason that they were interested in the production, the power. They liked the fact that he could lead off some, and he's a different kind of leadoff guy, but had some success there. They loved the connection with Kevin Long, the new hitting coach. And Kevin Long is a man with some juice, and he's well-respected. His voice and opinion is well-respected. He wanted Schwarber, and they wanted to make that happen. But on top of all of that, one of the reasons they were attracted to Kyle Schwarber is his winning pedigree. He had won in Chicago. He had known how to win. And there was I'm not going to say, you know, the clubhouse was, you know, devoid of guys who had won, but there weren't a lot of them, and they thought they needed somebody who had been there, done that. Knew what it felt like, and that was another reason they brought in Kyle Schwarber, that intangible reason. So, you know, winning, coming from a winning culture, being a run producer and being a leader, he's backed up all of that, in my opinion. Had a really, really special year. It's not over. I think he's going to be really up for this series in Chicago, where he broke in and made a name for himself. I mean, he's still kind of identified as a Cub. We were in Atlanta last week, and every time he comes to the plate, the organist in the Braves ballpark, plays that song "Let's Go Cubs," the Cubs theme song. So he's still identified with the Cubs. So I'm sure he wants to go out there and play well. And the Phillies need him to play well, because two home runs. He's coming in there on a roll. Good to see. But I've enjoyed every minute of watching this guy play this year.
Rhys Hoskins also comes into Chicago on a roll. He had a very big series against the Braves. Five times?
Seven for 17 in that series. With five doubles, a home run, and four RBIs. I'm not sure if that was the homestand or the series, but
that was the series. That was just that Braves series. And in fact, nine of Hoskins' last 11 hits are doubles and homers. So he's really been delivering from a power perspective. And when you talk about Schwarber getting up for the Cubs series, boy, how big would it be if Schwarber and Hoskins could stake them to an early lead? And that could set the tone for the entire series.
And it's so good because Rhys is such a streaky guy, and his streaks can last, two or three weeks. So to see the beginning of a streak here, 7 for 17 in that series, five doubles, a home run, four RBIs. It was also a good thing in that series. The last couple of games, Harper's starting to take some walks, which means, he's been struggling in September, but he's seeing the ball better when he's taking his walks. So he might be, primed to go off a little bit here. So you got Hoskins, Schwarber with two home runs Sunday. Bowman's 11 for his last 30, and JT is 10 for his last 24. He had 417 on the homestand. So, some signs that a streaky offense might be ready to go on a pretty good streak, and that would be a really good time for them to do it. But it's very encouraging to see Hoskins swing it the way he's kind of like Eflin. He's been here a long time. He's like Nola. I mean, you're talking, those are the three elder statesmen on the team in terms of being here a long time, and they've never won anything, and I know – all three are very, very hungry. It was really promising to see Nola pitch so well the other night. Even though he ran a bit of a high pitch count, he was good. Suarez is coming off a couple of good ones. So the top three in your rotation are looking pretty good with an offense that is showing some signs of awakening, and they need to carry it.
Yeah, Harper hitting just 153 this month, striking out in about a third of his plate appearances. The Phillies have played about 500 baseball, so you just think about, where they could potentially be in this race if Harper was doing a little more. This isn't going to last forever. It's probably the coldest he's looked since, I don't even know, the early stage of last season.
Yeah.
We talked about the Phillies' season-ending 10-game road trip. The Brewers are going to face some really good pitching this week, too. What's their upcoming schedule look like?
The Brewers have won 4 of 5. So, they're playing good ball. They have 2 with St. Louis, 4 with Miami, and 3 with Arizona, all at home. St. Louis is a tough team, but, Miami and Arizona are struggling. I still think, the Brewers are going to be a tough out, put it that way.
Yeah, the Brewers, just looking at their week ahead, they're going to see Miles Michaelis in the first game of that Cardinals series. They line up to face Sandy Alcantara, Pablo Lopez, and Edward Cabrera in the Marlins series. And we've talked about a lot this year that the Brewers are a team based around pitching. So, if someone else has an ace on the mound like an Alcantara who limits them, really could put a wrench in their own plans. But this tiebreaker, this is a big tiebreaker. If you do the math, the Phillies, if they go 5-5 over their final 10 games, the Brewers would still need to go 7-2.
Yeah.
So it's, as Kyle Gibson has said after his last two starts, the Phillies are still in the driver's seat. They feel really good as they embark on this final road trip. They're probably, the Padres, that's also a question. The Phillies are a game and a half behind the Padres. They have the tiebreaker over San Diego as well. The Padres have really turned it around over the last week. Juan Soto, who was so ice cold for, the prior month, reached base in half of his plate appearances last week, had a big series at Coors Field. So looks like San Diego's kind of turning things around. And if the season ended today, the Phillies would face the Cardinals in that first round.
Well, you knew Soto wasn't going to stay icy forever. You knew he was going to get it going. And like you mentioned, he has. They have home games remaining, 3 with the Dodgers, 3 with the White Sox, and 3 with the Giants. And like you mentioned, they're getting it together. They have won 7 of their last 9. It would be really great if the Phillies didn't have to rely on that tiebreaker to get in, especially in a year where they just added a 6th playoff team. So you're basically jumping on that 6th spot, which wasn't there last year, with a tiebreaker. Not to diminish the regular season. I mean, you go out to Milwaukee, you have a good series. I mean, it means something. That was in June, and 3 months later, it means something. But it would be nice to go right through the front door into this postseason and see what Mr. Wheeler and Mr. Nola can do in the first 2 games, because seen it a lot. Good pitching can stop good hitting. Playoff games are really tight. There's a different kind of intensity in a playoff game. And starting pitching can really set a tone and really tighten up an opposing dugout if it's good, and really, change the course of a series. So, but the Phillies, got to finish it off and have to get there first.
In referencing the wild card race, I was thinking about this the other day, that there's always complaining every time that Major League Baseball expands the playoff field. But if this was still the 4 playoff teams per league format, there would have been like no drama in the National League for the second half of the season. The Braves are 11.5 games ahead in the wild card race. So if there was still just the 1 wild card race, that would be over. Really, the only race that's been up for grabs is Braves and Mets in the NL East. The Braves trail the Mets by 1.5 games. They're trying, obviously, to leapfrog the Mets so that they can get a first round bye. But, going back to the Padres real quick, this Dodgers series they have coming up, they're 4-12 against the Dodgers. That team just seems to have their number the way that the Mets have the Phillies number. The Dodgers are resting some guys, like just paying attention to their last few games. Seems like every game the Dodgers are resting like one of their key players, Freddie Freeman here, Will Smith here, Mookie Betts there. So they're not going all out, but they're still a great team, and they're going to be throwing their best pitchers out there. We talked last week about how, on one hand you could face the Braves, on another hand you could face the Cardinals. Phillies just got to get in. I mean, they went 8-11 against the Braves and just split, so it's not like they would go into a Braves series thinking, woe is me, or anything like that. But it still comes down to this final trip. You need to clean up on the Cubs. You need to continue your dominance over the Nationals. The Phillies are 13-2 against the Nationals. And then there's that big series in Houston to end the year where it goes both ways. Like, on the one hand, the Astros are going to be wrapped up at that point. But on the other hand, that might increase the pressure on the Phillies in like a must-win environment against a team that has little to lose. It would almost be like facing the Marlins at that point in the season.
Yeah, because when you're playing a team that's coasting and not showing the intensity it usually would, because basically they have earned the right to coast. Yeah, it's in the back of your mind. Okay, we should be rolling over these guys, and now all of a sudden you try too hard and you start pressing, and it has a negative effect. I mean, the mind leads the body so much in this sport. It's incredible. So I just think they almost need to kind of blank out the other dugout, blank out what it says on the front of the uniform, and just worry about yourself, and just worry about trying to play great baseball and get there, and then see if the blueprint works. And the blueprint all along has been Wheeler and Nola in a short series, and try to ride that.
Yeah, and if they can ride that, they might even, who knows, if they can advance past that, they'd get a home playoff game. And this weekend, Jim, 2 huge crowds, 37,000 on Saturday, 32,000 more on Sunday. Pretty good to see after some, sparse crowds earlier in the month.
Corey, the crowd on Saturday was great. It was funny. It was it 38? I think it was 38,000, 36,000. It was a good crowd. Kyle Wright sort of lulled the place to sleep for the first 5-plus innings. He didn't allow a hit, to the point where I was asking some of the Phillies staff, have you ever been no hit twice in a season? Some of their PR staff. So with the help of Chris Ware, he loans me his media guide because I've got mine at home. But they had been no hit twice in a season, because they were no hit early this season in April up in Citi Field. So they were no hit in, I think it was August of 60, twice by the Milwaukee Brewers. Lou Burdett and Warren Spahn no-hit the Phillies within a month of each other. So, you know, you go from looking up, have they ever been no-hit twice in the season? And then, you know, you get a big two-run home run. I think it was a double from Hoskins and to break up the no-hitter. And then a two-run home run from Harper. Now you're on the board. And then you squeeze across another one in the seventh. And all of a sudden now, it's a three-run game. Right's out of there. And you get some traffic on the bases. And now that crowd has come alive. And it was, you know, things like that kind of sometimes go over your head, but it was really noticeable having spent a lot of time in that ballpark, especially in the good years when the crowd was a difference maker. That crowd was different in the seventh inning on Saturday when the team all of a sudden was down by three runs and they could sense it. And Harper had a great quote after the game. He said the fans were in it with us and in it for us. And I thought that was a really good quote and a really good tribute to the fans. In it with us and in it for us. I mean, I think he recognized that they felt like difference makers. And, you know, they didn't complete the comeback in that inning in the seventh. I mean, Hoskins almost hit the three-run home run that would have totally electrified the crowd. But the crowd was good. And it wasn't a sellout, 36, 37, 38,000, whatever it was. But, you know, I'm not one of these guys that says, where is everybody? More people should be here. People aren't buying into this team. Whether it's 12,000, 20,000, or 36,000, the people that are there care about the team, and those are the people you take your hat off to. So really great job by that crowd coming alive and trying to kick that team to the tying run in the seventh inning. It didn't happen, but it just showed you these people really want it. The people that are there really want it. So it would be very cool for the guys in that clubhouse, for the organization, and for the fans, if they could, you know, bring this thing back and get a home playoff game. But again, I'm getting ahead of myself. Big road trip, 10 games, big road trip.
Yeah, I personally feel like the people who aren't there are probably just sitting on the couch with a multi-screen setup, watching the Phillies Talk podcast on YouTube on one screen, watching the game on the other. So that's probably what it is. But all right, Jim, this is it. This is the big road trip. It's going to either end in a party or massive disappointment for the Phillies as they try to catch their first playoff berth since 2011. It starts Tuesday night in Chicago, Zach Wheeler on the hill for the Phillies, followed by Aaron Nola and Ranger Suarez. So be sure to stay tuned to NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com for the coverage, and we will catch you here on the Phillies Talk podcast later in the week.